know, nowadays it's really difficult as an artist to catch anybody's attention.
Hey guys, we're back with another Tracks That Made Us. For this episode, we are joined by the awesome Christian from Dead Star Talk, and we're going to talk about Oasis. So how are you, dude?
I'm good, man. This is a good topic. I'm looking forward to spending a bit of time discussing this epic band.
Yeah, man. I mean, first off, it was really cool to work with you on the cover we did. I can never pronounce it right. Acquiesce. I think that's how you say it.
Yeah, if you don't know, I won't know it, but that's also my song. But as a Dane, I'm definitely lost on that one.
It's a great song. And I mean, it's amazing that was B-side, you know? I mean, for most bands, I reckon, you know, that could be literally like main single of a record, you know?
Yeah, it's mad. I think at the time, I mean, Noel Gallagher was just writing like a machine. It's so inspired, like everything that happened around the first two Oasis albums. It's just crazy. I mean, the level of the B-sides in general is just out of this world. There's so many good B-sides.
I don't know if it was the same for you in Denmark, but all those songs got released as an album called The Master Plan. I think that came out, I think it might have come out before or just after Be Here Now. But I mean, you know, I love Oasis, but that album, you know, I'll go on the record. I thought that was actually as good, if not better, than Be Here Now. It just has that sort of energy, and they're a bit rough around the edges, but there's just so many great ideas they've got there.
Yeah, and it also shows that sometimes if you don't have that much time in the studio, the raw energy that you capture on a demo is sometimes quite hard to replicate on an actual, you know, studio band recording. But I was actually, when I was a really young teenager, I didn't even know what a B-side was, but I became really into Oasis. And I think just after the hype of Definitely Maybe between the two albums. And then I discovered that there were other songs on the singles. You know, I'd never really bought singles because I always thought that was kind of silly. I didn't have a lot of money as a kid. So just spending money on CDs and being really tight about it. But then I realized that Oasis were actually, you know, putting three or four unreleased tracks on all the singles. And I started collecting the singles, and it was totally mind blowing.
That's something I kind of really miss from that era. Growing up, you know, I used to, you know, the same with Oasis. I used to really love Pulp, you know, a bit out of the scene, but like Radiohead. They had all these different like EPs or single collections, and I don't know if you had this as well, like, you know, the Japanese edition that would have like a whole load of different stuff on it. And it just kind of seems like that's something that's, I guess you've got kind of like, now it's like, well, we've got this YouTube only content, or we've got, you know, something for TikTok or whatever. But it was very much like the sense of collecting stuff when we were kids that I enjoyed.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, and you listened differently because you only had like, you didn't have like an infinite pool of songs. You only had the albums or singles that you had, which is kind of cool actually, because it really forced you to focus on the music. You know, nowadays it's really difficult as an artist to catch anybody's attention for more than one track. If you even manage to capture people's attention for one track, it's a completely, you know, different time and age. And in a way, it's sometimes kind of sad, but it has other perks, you know. It's all, you know, there's always ups and downs, but I miss that as well. Definitely miss the nostalgia of just, you know, having to make a decision or whichever album I'd be stuck with for the next month until I have enough money.
I used to love pissing off like people in record stores, because like as teenagers you used to go in and like there were like companies, like there was HMV, there was Our Price, and you could basically like pick out a record. And they'd have a little headphone booth, and you could just listen to it. And I just used to spend hours in there. And they knew I had no money, or they knew I could buy. They knew I could buy like one single on tape, but I listened to like four albums over an afternoon.
Just so cool. We always got kicked out of the local record store as well because he didn't want us going in there. An angry old man who was always like kicking us out. You're not gonna buy anything anyways.
And he was probably sounding like us, like, oh, you know, these kids today, they can put on a CD and they can just skip to the next track and move it as opposed to having to listen to it or move the needle or whatever. And now we're, you know, now we're old.
we're coming back to vinyl, you know.
It's
thing, you know, like we just send our debut album to press, or like we're getting a test pressing, but it's like ages. I think it takes 6 or 7 weeks because there's too much demand, not enough factories around. But it's a funny thing because as a kid, I never had vinyl, and it was something my old man had. It was lying somewhere in the attic collecting dust. But and now we're actually going back to producing these.
I think it goes back to that desire to collect things, because I kind of. You know, you see a lot of bands, like, they're releasing stuff and it's like, you know, you get the vinyl and then you get the download as well. And it's almost just, it's just that way of like putting your, you know, your flag on the mast and saying like, this is what I like, you know. And you see more and more people like having their vinyls up in prominent places, or the way they display them or whatever. And I think it's a really cool way to kind of connect with the music.
It's really cool. I mean, it's also like, it keeps on going up, you know. I think I just had a look at some of the numbers that came out from IFPI, you know, like the Global Label Trade Association, whatever. I think like vinyl sales were almost valuing $1 billion in turnover in 2020.
Wow. I heard, I don't know if this is correct or if I maybe dreamed it, but that vinyl outsold CD for the first time last year, for the first time since the mid 80s, which makes sense because no one's buying CDs.
Yeah, it took over. Yeah, I don't know when it took over exactly, but it's definitely true that it's now the second biggest format after streaming, obviously. And as streaming is really saturating in a lot of places now, if you go to the UK or Scandinavia, I mean, growth is still there, but it's with a couple of percentage points. It's not this madness anymore, but the vinyl is also going upwards, and it's, you know, it's tricky for small artists. There's not a lot of as we were just talking about before, it's not easy to get your foot in the door and that fan base and all of it. But I mean, there's definitely a lot of good stuff happening. It's just a matter of navigating this mad pool of entertainment and actually being worthy of 10 minutes of attention every night.
I guess that's the great thing about vinyl, because like at the end of the day, if someone buys the vinyl and they're going to listen to it, they're going to experience the album. And I don't know if that's going to come back. You know, that's something that I've really, really missed. You know, I love making playlists and doing all that sort of stuff. But, you know, the creativity of an artist that can go, you know, this is the album, this is the sequence in which I want you to listen to the tracks. And when you kind of get further down the line, when you get like these bands that are like, I'm going to release a trilogy of albums, you know, like, you know, it's that level of creativity that hopefully can come back and maybe become a bit more, I don't know, become less of a niche now and get back into the spotlight.
I think it's a good point. It's a very different listening experience. It's also the audio quality, although I'm not the most audio obsessed guy, to be honest. It is now that we've been in the process of recording an album, and you listen, I was listening to the vinyl masters, and then I just compared the single we've got up on Spotify. I mean, when you listen to how Spotify compresses, uses, and evens out all the masters, there's a lot of, like, say, listening experience that goes lost in the way that these digital platforms service the music to us. And that's where, you know, most people are listening to music now. And that includes myself. But it's been kind of an aha experience to realize just how much dynamic is cut off by a platform like Spotify.
Yeah, it's really weird. I remember in the, I guess it's kind of like the early 2000s, and you know, there was the whole kind of Napster thing happening, but at the same time, there were artists. The one that really springs to mind is Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, was really pushing for, like, you know, super audio DVDs and trying to get to that next level of fidelity, and it just kind of never happened. Making records and surround sound and doing all of that. But I guess, you know, everything essentially just came down to cost, you know, and And then I guess the practicality, you know, years and years ago when I was in a band, it was like when we were getting our album mixed, the guys who were mixing it, they were kind of on the cutting edge, because they were like, well, we do a mix and we do it to like to little in-ear headphones. And we were just like, that's crazy. Why would you do that? And they said, well, because the way it's going, everyone's going to be listening to the music like this. No one's going to be listening on their, you know, their big sound systems, because that's where the market was going. That's where the expansion was. It was to go out, you know, as wide as possible, go out into different territories where the technology wasn't at the level that maybe it was, you know, when, you know, you were growing up in Denmark, I was growing up in England, where, you know, most families had a good sound system, and it was about getting your record on the sound system. I mean, that's another weird thing to talk about, you know. I don't know if you had this, where it was like, okay, you know, maybe for a few hours every day, or maybe even once a week, your mum and dad would be like, well, you can listen to your records on the proper stereo, and you'd really kind of get to enjoy them. But it kind of, yeah, it went off in that different direction of, well, you know, now that everyone's got a phone, that's what everyone's going to listen to the music on. It's going to go through little earphones. And I mean, look, there's benefits, there's cost benefit to everything. I think it's amazing that at the end of the day, you know, we can talk about the good old days, but, you know, the positives are, you know, we've been able to connect, we've been able to collaborate on this cover because of all of this. So just a changing world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I live and work in Hamburg in Germany, and the rest of Death Star Talk, obviously, it's a Danish band, and the rest of the lads are in Copenhagen. And it's actually fairly easy, thanks to technology, because you can just shoot demos back and forth. There's so many user-friendly tools like GarageBand, which anyone that has an iPhone will get for free, that really enable people to work on tracks, develop tracks, arrange tracks, work on different parts. And you don't actually need to be in a rehearsal space every week. Of course, we do also meet up and have some rehearsal weekends every now and then, and so on and forth. But it's, I mean, you wouldn't be able to, in the past, with these stupid, I don't know whether you had these four tracks. I mean, it's just, you can't compare that to what you can do nowadays. It's just, I mean, all of that stuff is just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So there's, you know, so many advantages to it. And obviously, I'm not even, I think, as tech savvy as you are when I judge the just the ride social media channels. I mean, it's like, with this kind of skill, I mean, it's crazy what you can do nowadays. It's just, and it's great.
Yeah, man. I mean, the opportunities are out there for young and slightly, you know, young at heart alike. Yeah. So let's go back to Oasis. So, you know, obviously for me, you know, I'm like a, you know, child of the 90s. I grew up really close to Nebworth, where the legendary Oasis concerts happened. So obviously that was, you know, that was massive. Like, you couldn't get away from Oasis in the mid 90s, being of the kind of age I am. But, you know, you grew up in Denmark. How did you kind of come across Oasis?
I'm just gonna be a bit confusing, but actually I actually grew up in Brussels, although my parents are Danes. So I am a Eurotrash child. I think that's also where my undistinct English accent comes from. It's kind of like European melting, because Brussels is just like, you know, my best friends when I was a teenager we were big Oasis fans. So we formed, when I was 16, we formed like a very Oasis inspired band called Mirage, because that also means Oasis basically.
Nice.
And we're writing our own little tunes, really copying to the max, but it was an Italian guy and a Welsh guy and an English guy and then me. So it was a completely Euro trash rock band. And I lived in Denmark when I was a small kid.
Yeah.
Back when I went to university and stuff after. But I spent like all my teenage years I spent in Brussels. So in that sense, Oasis were massive as well. Obviously, yeah. I mean, the environment that I was moving around in was a bit like weird, because I was in this international school. So it was like kids from all over Europe. And obviously that kind of bubble makes it a bit difficult for me to really judge how the Belgians were perceiving Oasis. But in my school, it was massive. Obviously, I had a lot of English friends, so I think I really got the good sense of how massive the band was. You know, that's also how I discovered Oasis and all of that. It was so big, you know, with the English kids. It was, man. But I have the feeling that the French and the Italians are also a lot bigger Oasis fans than here in Germany, for example.
Yeah.
In Germany, British rock music was never as big as it was in the south of Europe. So being based in Germany now, I can see that it's much more American music and American rock music that has been influential. Actually, the kind of stuff that Just Arrived does, you know, like grunge was much bigger than Brit rock.
I guess as well in Germany as well, there's also the tail end. There were so many Americans in and around Germany at that time anyway, that there's that huge influence. I mean, you find so many kind of, a lot of like American musicians who, oh, I was born in Berlin, you know, because of the kind of, I guess, the geopolitics of the time or whatever. So there's so much kind of connection there. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that era was just amazing. Like what other bands from the kind of Britpop generation were you listening to as well?
I started digging into, you know, I just found Manchester fascinating. So obviously I stumbled upon the Stone Roses and looking, you know, backwards. Yes. Of the current like Brit rock bands, I think The Verve was quite influential as well, at least to me personally. And let me think. Actually, I like Blur a lot as well. I didn't take part in that whole feud. the tabloid bass feud, I thought it was a great band. I mean, like Beetlebum and Song 2 and that.
Oh, yeah.
They recorded on Iceland. I mean, they also released some amazing albums. And in general, I think the British rock bands, like not just in the past, but still, you know, to this day and age, I mean, it's just amazing how many good bands come out of the UK.
It's funny that,
you know, a lot of them, sometimes the American bands tend to become a bit Imagine Dragons and all these bands that make it big. That it's kind of silly. I don't know. It's kind of like an American sitcom.
Yeah.
British artists take themselves seriously, and I always appreciated that in the music I listen to.
Yeah, I mean, Manchester's a really funny one as well. Like, there's this radio station, I can't remember the name of it, but they are literally just like Manchester based. And I remember, like, you know, trying to connect with them or whatever. They're like, but are you from Manchester? And you're like, well, no, we're not from Manchester. It's like, well, we don't only play Manchester bands, but we want to predominantly support, especially like unsigned bands or new bands. We want them to come from Manchester. And it's like, you think, oh, that's a bit weird. And then you look back on how many amazing bands have come out of such a tiny, tiny place. I mean, like, I say Manchester's a tiny place. I mean, it's, you know, probably like the top five or six cities in the UK. The UK is pretty small. And you just, I mean, you know, obviously you've got Liverpool as well with the Beatles, but just that region, the amount of quality bands coming from such a small area is absolutely overwhelming when you go there, and the kind of rich musical history. Even when you drill into the UK and you look at the different regions, Wales is another place that produces crazy good bands. Yeah, pardon?
Which bands?
So there's like Wales, you've got, well, I'm not sure if they're great anymore, but yeah, like the Lost Prophets were pretty big, but we don't really talk about them anymore. But there's, you know, Manic Street Preachers, Funeral for a Friend, Stereophonics. You know, these are really, really big bands, and they all come from these tiny little places in Wales. I do have a theory that there's not much to do. So people get really, really good at their instruments, and it's cheap as well, you know, but you know, the quality of the music that comes out is just unmatched.
Yeah, you're right. But I think if you look at Iceland, I mean, it's also another place. It's like PR, Sigur Rós, and it's like 300,000 people living in there. It's like mad. It's like absolutely mad how many major acts actually came out of Iceland.
Yeah,
I think you're right, because when people have nothing to do, I mean, and if you have a good tradition of playing music and stuff, I mean, it just makes a massive difference. I mean, but it is, I also think it's confidence, you know, like if a band really makes it big and it's one of their own from whichever place it is, it's kind of like it makes other artists dare to do, and it inspires confidence. And you always see that. That's also why you get these booms from different countries and music scenes, that all of a sudden you have a ton of bands. you have it in Germany right now, like Austria is massive, like Austrian bands, obviously they're all singing in German, and it's a small country as well, but they're like dominating the charts here as well.
And I guess it's like, it's, you know, you create these scenes, you know, where like everyone is kind of, okay, well, you know, if we're going to take a band out on tour, like why not take, you know, these guys that we know and that sort of camaraderie. That's great, you know, but going back to Manchester, you know, you just think about the history and, you know, you have, you know, Joy Division, you know, you've got the, like you said, the Stone Roses, you've got the Happy Mondays, you've got Smiths,
it's mad.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, we talked about this on another podcast, but, you know, that legendary Sex Pistols gig in Manchester that apparently, like, you know, everybody who was there ended up selling a million albums. And you think, wow.
Myths, it's crazy, but I mean, in a way, they deserve to have such legends because it's just, I mean, all myths. I mean, it's just an impressive. If you're into guitar music, you know, it's
yeah,
it's, you cannot ignore
all dance music.
True, all dance music. Yeah.
So big that. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I mean, and that's obviously. I mean, I'm also looking towards all the stuff that's happening right now in the UK in general. I mean, there seems to be a lot of bands, a lot of young bands that are picking up the guitar again.
Yeah.
Coming up. And that's really, you know, that's really exciting, I think, because honestly, I've been a bit fed, you know, I work with music professionally. I work in the music industry as well. And it's just been so much over, like, let's call it overtly produced music. I mean,
yeah,
where there's no nerve and it's all just studio technology, basically. And it sounds great, but there's just something that's not them. At least, you know, if you're into music that also has some kind of authentic and spontaneous energy. And this is something that, you know, that's why we're making music again. And that's probably why you guys are also making music. You know, there's been this huge gap. And sometimes we all think that we have these original ideas, but actually we're just part of some kind of movement without realizing. And I do think there is a really exciting movement that kind of also encompasses the energy that bands like Oasis had, you know, back in the day.
I feel there's, you know, and I think both our bands, although you know we're in different styles, I think there's this kind of similar theme running, and I think it's, you know, obviously, you know, the pandemic gave people like you and I the opportunity to go, actually, you know, all of a sudden we've got a bit more time on our hands, and what we're going to do, you know, we start writing more songs. And, you know, for us, it was about, you know, finishing a record that we've been, you know, on the side doing for many years. And, you know, for you guys, it was, I've got these songs, like, you know, I've started writing. Why not get these out? But what I kind of feel is, you know, let's say that maybe some of the positives that will come out of what's been a really, really difficult year is that maybe bands like us, we've kind of relighted the fire of writing music and doing that sort of thing. And I think one of the negative sides of the whole transformation of the music industry was many bands weren't getting to that, you know, album number three, where they're kind of more seasoned songwriters. And what I'm noticing is, a lot of the music that I've heard over the pandemic era has actually been, you know, people maybe in their 30s, you know, picking up those instruments again. And you know, I'm sure, you know, you never stopped writing songs. You just stopped kind of pursuing putting them out. But you've maybe been able to grow as a songwriter. And it is interesting, you know, there is definitely something amazing about getting that kind of raw youthful energy that comes when you're, you know, 18, 19 and you're writing music for the first time. And that's great. And there's definitely a market for that. But I think it has possibly been at the expense of those bands that develop and slowly craft and they're just coming at songwriting from a different angle. So I think it's been really cool that, you know, people like you and I can think of a few other bands in that situation who maybe have honed their craft a little bit, are going, actually, yeah, let's put something out, you know, and maybe that will see a resurgence in, like, well, like we were talking about, like the album, the listening experience, you know, it's not just about catering to what you think the audience wants. It's about doing something that you want to do for yourself as well and getting, like I said, that authenticity out.
Yeah, but it's a good point. You know, the funny thing for me is, like, I think I completely stopped playing music and writing, because I became independent and I had this music agency that I started developing with my partners, and I barely touched the guitar for 10 years until early 2020, just before the pandemic started. So then I started writing songs again, because we had this party with the old band, just like not playing music, just a reunion of the old guys in December 19. And that really inspired me somehow. And then this pandemic came, and I had this huge writer's explosion, because I hadn't written music for so long. And I wrote more than 50 songs in a year, which was obviously, the quality was varying. But it definitely showed me, like, if you're obsessed with songwriting, and I really wrote a lot, and I did a lot of demos the last year and a half, it's quite amazing, like, the quality really does change, and the maturity. And but, you know, I still write a lot on intuition. I do believe that, like, I always try to nail a song within an hour of getting the idea, lyric and music, and almost stay as authentic as I can with that sketch, and then bring it to the band. I like that process a lot, but even that process has become stronger, because it is, you know, it's a craft like everything else. And you're absolutely right. There's a massive difference between an 18-year-old punk band and a 35-year-old punk band. You know, and both are great, as you say, but it's two very different energies, you know, even if it's the same music genre. And unfortunately, most people stop because they have their careers. It's the rush hour of life, you know, people are getting kids and all of this stuff, and it becomes difficult to fit in the music. But it's actually a shame, because these are the generations of people that are kind of, they're still young, but they're not young, and they're getting older, but they're not old yet. So it's kind of, you're in the middle of society, and there's a lot of things to say that don't get said and that don't get told in music, because traditionally people would not have a pandemic where they could actually work on their song. Yeah. So it's a very good point.
Did you feel in writing all that stuff, it was quite kind of cathartic to kind of maybe, you know, to have 10 years off? It's quite, you know, I feel I've had quite a similar experience. You know, I'd kind of got in the music industry very early, got kind of chewed up, spit out. And by about 22, I was just like, I'm not into this. And it was only in my early 30s, I kind of got back into writing again. And you realize actually how important it was, writing music, writing lyrics was for just your well-being or whatever. And then all of a sudden you're able to get it all out, and you see things in a different way, maybe.
That's a good point. I mean, it's also, I think you go through tougher challenges in life when you get older. That's the way it is. Not always, but at least in my case. So, I mean, for me personally, the writing songs is definitely, you know, it's important for your well-being. I'm actually surprised by, you know, how much good it has done me to start writing songs again. And it's actually a fascinating thing about songwriting, is if you don't think and you let the song come, usually the lyrics come along with it, and you just have to try to catch whatever you're mumbling, because often there's a lot of meaning that you then kind of analyze and then fine tune into the final text. But I'm really fascinated by that. I mean, your brain is really, you know, and I mean, as a Scandinavian guy, we're not Italian, so it's not like I'm getting out my emotions all the time. We're pretty even Stevens. It's like music is a really useful tool, you know, to get out all of this, you know, stuff that life gives you, you know.
It's interesting. It sounds like your process is quite similar to mine. Like, I know some writers or some singers, and especially lyricists, they'll write reams and reams of lyrics, and they'll have, oh, I've got these lyrics, and we'll match them to a melody. But it sounds very much like you're quite similar to me, where it's like, I'm kind of thinking of the melody and piecing together lyrics. And sometimes actually, you know, I get it together, and it's only after the song's recorded that I really start to piece together, well, what's the song actually about? To me, it's almost subconscious. You're just like, get it out. You're just getting this emotion out. And it's only after listening that you go, I think that's what I meant. Yeah. You know?
Totally. I have the exact same process. It's like the song and the chords and and the lyrics and the melody, everything is kind of coming at once. And then I try to, well, not, I try not to think, I just try to, you know, record a demo as quick as, sometimes I have the opportunity to just, especially during this pandemic, where I'm in the office now, but I kind of turned my office into a recording studio as well.
It looks super cool.
My colleagues have not been around, you know, so I've had a lot of time alone in the studio, and I've had the opportunity, if I've had an idea, to just to record a rough sketch, and that's been quite, I'm gonna miss that when we reopen, and there's gonna be people here. I don't think I can do that any longer, but that's been, you know, that's, you know, it's interesting. I have the exact same process, but I guess this kind of music, you know, when you're doing rock music, and it is very much about the energy and the nerve, and you can so easily kill that by overriding and over discussing. Yeah. You probably know that in a band as well, if you have some annoying discussion in the rehearsal room, even if everyone's playing correctly, it sounds shit afterwards because there's like no energy left. So it's like, I think rock music really feeds off that natural spontaneous energy.
Yeah, no, for sure. So listen, I mean, I think we should probably talk a little bit about the process of how we did our cover together. I really enjoyed it. It was really cool. So we basically, Christian recorded his parts and then I recorded mine. I tried not too much to do it. I was tempted to make references, especially in my video, to the fact that we're kind of next to each other. But it was really cool. You know, it's just amazing how quickly this sort of stuff can come together.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. It was a lot of fun. And it's cool that you can actually, you know, like record and create a video that looks as if you're, yeah, that almost looks as if you're in the same room, you know. It's been done a lot during the pandemic, but, you know, I think we managed to do it very quickly and very naturally. So we didn't edit, we both played our parts live. So that gives it an interesting energy compared to other videos, because they might be very edited. I like that you can actually create almost a live, you know, a live collaboration between Hamburg and the UK. That's quite amazing, I think.
Yeah, I think the next step, once we get better with the tech, if I don't have a very stable internet connection, but you know, when you can actually do it literally live and just capture it. Because I think one of the other things is it's the time, like in this world of like content, it's just to be able to fire out the stuff and do it quickly. Like, you know, we've done some really great collaborations with some really, really awesome artists, and it's been literally one of the things that's kept me going through the pandemic, other than, you know, obviously writing and recording our own music. But, you know, some of these projects, you know, they can take weeks because, you know, everybody's got together and everybody's got to do this stuff. So, I mean, we literally put it together in like a few hours, and it was just so cool to do, to be like, I've sent it, you know, bang, I've sent it, whack it together and actually have something. So, you know, it was a really cool experience, and I really, really enjoyed it. And hopefully everybody's going to love it as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, that's it. I mean, I think, you know, what I liked about the process is the fact that one of us played guitar and sang, me and you sang, and that was it. I mean, we could have done that in a bar somewhere as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't this, you know, I like that catch. Yeah, speaking about spontaneous energies and all of that. And we kind of twisted the song a bit, but didn't discuss it. We just did it, improvise an extra, so tweak the song a bit and stuff, but without even discussing it, just going with the flow. That was really cool. So I'm not surprised at hearing that you record and write in the same way that I do. So, I mean, I could kind of feel that with this process as well. So definitely.
I am wondering what the hardcore kind of Oasis purists are going to make of our little exploration at the end. I know both of us are quite into harmonies, so it's like, let's see where we can take this.
That's a good one. Yeah, it was cool. But hey, what can you do? You can't please them all.
That's, yeah, exactly. I mean, I always say more people dislike the Beatles than like them, which I think is insane.
Yeah.
But
yeah. You know. I agree, by the way, but it's the way it is. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing, you know. It's like you it's good if you push a few buttons with your music. It's great. I mean, there's so many internet warriors out there. There's always going to be people hating on whatever. If you put yourself out there, that's a part of the game nowadays. You know, it's fine. But actually, as you said, it's a luxury if someone actually spends enough time to hate on you. It means to actually consume and watch the content. I think that's the bigger challenge. You see how tricky it's getting just actually to get out there with whatever stuff you're releasing. You know, it's mad. I mean, it's just a mad jungle. Yeah, mad fight for attention.
Well, listen, before we wrap up, you guys have got an awesome new track coming out same day as us, Friday, 28th of May.
Yeah.
Too Many, Too Much. Just, what's the song about? Have you how did it come to you?
Well, it was actually, I mean, the song was really off the backbone of a pretty big personal crisis just before the pandemic. But I wrote it at the beginning of the pandemic, and it was kind of this duality of the world closing down and myself struggling with some pretty big challenges in my private life. And it was kind of like, it was just this overwhelming double sense of, too much crap going on at the same time. But then somehow the song had this positive vibe to it, or was this hopefulness at the same time. So it was just a really honest song about someone having a tough time and then being hit by a pandemic.
Well, hopefully that won't happen to too many more people.
No, let's hope that we've seen the worst of it.
I mean, yeah, I know.
And as we said, you know, it brought out all of this music for people like you and me. I mean, I'm also thankful about the pandemic because it really, you know, on some levels, you know, obviously I would probably have preferred to live my life without it. But that being said, you know, being lucky that I didn't have any health issues so far, at least, and so on and forth. I mean, of course, easy to say that when you're in that privileged situation, but it definitely also brought about, you know, songs like Too Many, Too Much. And you guys have a track out as well. And I also had the privilege of listening, and sounds really massive. I didn't even hear the master yet, though. I only heard the...
No, I'll send you. I literally, just before we started talking, I got sent the album master. So I'll drop that over so you can have a listen over the weekend, see what you think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it sounded really promising. It sounded really big. You know, I love the guitar work. It's just sounded pretty massive.
Knock your socks off. Anyway, man, it was really, really cool to talk. Let's let everyone check out this cover, and go and check out Dead Star Talk, go and check out Just a Ride, you know, support our dreams. And also, like you said, it's this positive thing that's come out. And I think, you know, I think we can both say that we're people that have, you know, through a really hard time, you've kind of rediscovered what's really important. And if you can make something and you can be creative, I think that's a really positive thing for anybody to do, you know?
Yeah, spot on. Amen, I would say. I can only second that. So, I hope that the world discovers more of Just a Ride, because it's a really good band, people. I'm happy that I discovered. I think Razor is an amazing single too, by the way. It's a great
song. Awesome. Cool. Anyway, guys, take it easy. See ya. Bye.
Wish I'd said
to save my soul to sleep and take me
back to bed.
Wanna be alone when we could be in life instead.
Because we need each other, we believe in one another, and I know we're gonna uncover. Sleeping in our souls. Because because we need each other. We believe in one another, and I know we're gonna uncover what's sleeping in our souls. What's sleeping in our souls. Because we need each other, we believe in one another, and I know we're gonna uncover what's sleeping in our souls. Because we need each other, we believe in one another, and I know we're gonna uncover what's sleeping in our souls.
Acquiesce.
Thank you very much for listening, guys.
Great to be recording with Christian from Dead Star Talk. Hope you guys enjoyed it.
Stay safe, stay healthy, take care.
Peace out.